A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. You've experienced it in theaters. Now, the mission comes home. Rogue One. Relive the excitement.
We need to capture the Death Star plans if there's any hope of destroying it.
Rogue One, a Star Wars story, rated PG-13. Complete your VHS collection now.
Let's go!
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you, my friends, have the information you need to know to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. I'm Tom Merritt. That man is Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, live here on the West Coast Studios. I like it when we're face-to-face, can actually look at each other.
Yeah.
We're just going to stare longingly into each other's eyes for the next hour.
It doesn't make for as good of a show for you.
Yeah, but really we love cool it. It's tantric. It's great.
Yeah. We'll hold all the news until the very end. We are going to talk about all the news you need today, and we'll start with our primary target. All right, so I have prepared surveys for you two ways this morning.
Okay.
In our brunch time cord killers.
Yes.
First, Pivotal Research has analyzed the Nielsen numbers and notes that in those numbers, February English language broadcast and ad-supported cable is down 10.3% in viewers, 18 to 49, and ad impressions are down 7.2%. Those numbers don't always track entirely because people watch ad-free stuff, whatever. TV usage for the 18 to 49 year group for connected devices, which is basically your Rokus, your Apple TVs, anything hooked up to your television, is up to 9.9% of 18 to 49s. It was 6.2% last year and 3.6% 2 years ago. This doesn't count laptops, tablets. This is just television viewing. So basically what Pivotal Research is finding is television watching down when you look at traditional cable and broadcast, television watching up when you look at connected devices. And then Morning Consult did a survey of millennials ages 18 to 29 and found that 29% of them have no pay TV. Most of them cited cost. 20% cited the quality of content on streaming on demand, those things that they can watch on their Rokus and Apple TVs. And more than half of the 18 to 29 group, 54%, say they stream more than they watch regular TV. So these basically go hand in hand, which is the data is showing people not watching broadcast and cable in general, definitely watching more on their connected boxes. And in the 18 to 29 year old group, yes, they are also doing that, even greater numbers than the other demos.
Looking at the article, it wasn't clear to me. I mean, 29% is a big number no matter what, but it's they use the phrase in the headline cord cutters, but that would imply that they had cable and then got rid of it.
Right, cord nevers might count in there too.
Correct. Yeah. Which I would love to know if this is an increasing trend or if these are just people who never had cable and they're just aging into the demographic that they become interesting to these researchers. So going in reverse order, 54% say they stream more than they watch. That feels right. And millennials go to what, age 30?
It's 18 to 29 for the purposes of this survey.
Yeah. Okay. That totally makes sense. But then again, we live in a podcast bubble, so we might be in a different place.
We live in a podcast bubble that we created because we do a podcast about these very people, so we run into them more often.
Correct. Exactly. What's curious, and I wonder how it's going to change as they age and make more money. The third of them that say cable is too expensive, that's why I do everything. Number one, we've talked about, there's a number of different studies that show that, if you're a cord cutter, then basically you just spend all that same amount of money, that same $150 that you would normally spend on cable, you end up spending it on all the other services to replace
right. And
go a la carte on there. And we'll have some other stories about another.
Here's the thing that people forget. If you're a cord never,
yep,
or if you're not a cord completionist,
right?
Like, I won't watch sports anymore. I'll just watch it at the bar, whatever. You will save money. Like, if you're a cord never and you're like, well, I could pay $10 a month for Netflix, or I can pay $35 a month for the skinniest bundle from my cable company. I choose Netflix and YouTube, right? Like, it's, yes, it's not an apples to apples comparison, but people are like, I don't need all those extra things I get for the extra price. And to be honest, $35 a month is being very forgiving in my comparison, because most people are paying $90 or more for cable.
Sure, sure. Well, and I think you bring up an interesting point where I would love to know if there's an attitude among the millennials studied that it's okay not to have everything at all the time. Because when we were growing up, you know, when there was like the idea of just not having access to giant chunks of content was painful. Whereas I don't know that people mind it.
You always felt on the outs, like, oh yeah, we don't subscribe to the package, it gets Bravo, or oh yeah, no, they haven't added that one to our cable system yet in our town, which only has one cable system because we're still suffering under monopolistic rules right. from the past. Well, but, right.
Keep in mind,
and now it's like, I don't really care. You know, I can get that show in another way.
Right. Well, and it's hard to remember or hard to explain to people who have never experienced a world before the internet. Like, television was the way you felt yeah. connected to the world.
Right.
That's how you know, people, you turned on the television, you always had it on. So if any breaking news could happen, you could hear it. So you could know what everyone was going to talk about. And you just felt connected at all times. Right. But nowadays the internet just makes it possible to where, you know, it's like, I'm going to go to Reddit if I want to feel plugged into what's going on. So it makes sense that you could just shrug your shoulders and say, like, well, if it's really good, I'll hear about it.
I remember when they did the those decade shows on VH1 the first time.
Sure. Right?
And everybody was talking about them. And I lived in a situation where VH1 wasn't on basic cable. You had to pay like for two more tiers to get it. And I remember how that made me feel left out, like, yeah, well, I don't get VH1.
Cultural thing happening, you know, right now.
I can't see it. There is no way for me to see it without paying for money or going to someone's house, right?
Yeah.
Whereas now, if that happens, you're like, oh, well, which store do I buy it on? iTunes? Is it on iTunes? Vudu? Can I get it on Vudu? Google Play?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, or maybe I'll just download it somewhere.
Or somebody's got a bootleg of it on right. YouTube or exactly. whatever. Yeah.
Well, honestly, I don't think any of these numbers are going to be surprising, but you get a lot of folks out there trying to argue like, no, people aren't cutting the cord, and who's buying all these boxes anyway? And so we provide these sort of in part as a service to just say, yeah, no, there's legit numbers out there showing people are using these set-top boxes. They are cutting the cord at certain points. It may not be as fast as some people want to say, but it's certainly not as slow as other people want to say.
Absolutely.
And those people being cord-cutting show hosts on the one side and cable companies on the other. All right. Hey, you know what? The only reason we are able to sit here and do this show is because of you, if you're somebody who supports us on Patreon. Patreon.com/cordkillers.
Heck yeah, man. You guys can keep us loud, live, and independent. Join the, 1,500 plus people that are kicking us some dimes. Hopefully we're saving you guys a little bit of money by teaching you how to cut the cord and watch what you want when you want, whatever device you want. 1,700 plus. Wow. And if you've gotten some value, we sure would love a few pennies of that.
Yeah. All we say is, hey, you get a value out of the show? Put a number on that. Give it back to us at patreon.com/cordkillers. Even if it's like $1 a month, that's all it takes. Let's talk about how to watch all this stuff. All right. This is one of those stories we've done this before. Like, hey, this sounds like good news, except for this part. Oh, and this other part.
Oh, no.
AMC, according to sources, this is not an official announcement. We should make that clear. This is sources telling Reuters that AMC is considering launching a commercial-free online video streaming service.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I like some AMC programming. Maybe that'll get all caught up on The Walking Dead.
Yeah, or Preacher.
Sure.
You know, I can do all that stuff. Well,
finally watch great. All of Mad Men.
Commercial-free, as long as you have a cable subscription.
You
have to authenticate with your cable subscription.
Oh, well, I'm sure it's a value-added proposition, because they're already getting my money if I have cable, so this is a great way for them to extend better customer experience to me.
It'll only cost you $5 to $7 a month.
To pay more.
For the thing that you have to already be paying cable to get.
That I already bought.
But it will feature digital-only spinoff shows that you won't be able to get otherwise. webisodes, shall I call them?
Yeah, webisodes, or how are those behind the scenes featurettes or whatever?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know how they do for The Walking Dead. They've done those like off season miniseries that are short.
Sure.
I think that's probably it. And they're probably going to be in the Walking Dead universe.
Yeah, okay, fine. I'm sure somebody somewhere thinks this is a Roma. In fact, if there is even one person who thinks this is sounds like a good deal, please write us, because I don't believe you exist, person.
AMC is working real hard here to please the cable partners. That's what this is about.
Sure.
They're like, hey.
Well, they are also very well positioned.
You can sell this $5 to $7 thing. You know, it's a value add. It'll come on your cable bill. We'll provide it. And we're not going to have a competing standalone offer like we do with Sundance, which we also own. I mean, it's not like AMC doesn't know how to do this. Sundance Now is exactly what we would want this to be, right?
Right. Well, and I'd hate to admit it, but you're 100% right, and it's maybe even a smart play for them to do, where it's like, because look, we are reaching a point where if someone has cable, it's fair to just consider them a sucker. And then they could say, hey, you've got a lot of suckers. You want more money from your suckers? Just tell them what a great value add this is, and you can get more money harvesting from them.
I just don't see people paying for this. Like, if I'm already paying for cable...
I do see people paying for this, because somebody picks up the phone and they chat and they say, oh, what programming are you interested in cable? They're like, oh, to be honest, I'm just getting cable for The Walking Dead. Love The Walking Dead. Everything about The Walking Dead is great. I'm like, oh, well, if you're a super fan, you could get this and it'll get bonus Walking Dead episodes.
And commercial free. I mean, commercial free is the sales pitch here too.
You know, that's actually not. But okay.
My problem is the people who are living in the cable world, are they really living in the set-top box world enough? I mean, we heard the numbers, 9%.
Okay. Let's say you live in the cable world and you like AMC and stuff. And then they call you saying, hey, we know you love AMC. You can watch everything commercial free, instant on demand, back catalog of everything.
I think it's just
$5.
Yeah. So the pitch is on AMC's app or website. When you have logged in with your cable and you're watching on the website, they put a banner up, say, hey, tired of these ads?
Right.
Pay $5 a month and right. You could get rid of them right here. It's upselling the people who are already there. And then the cable companies don't mind it. I just don't see it being a lot of people. Strikes me as the only utility here is we have now created the app that we can eventually sell standalone someday, right?
Yeah, well, and to be honest, I don't even know that they're making a ton of money on the deal, because if they're taking out the ads and, you know, they know that they're going to take a hit on their traditional viewership model. They know that they're going to reduce their ad revenues.
Well, that's the other part of this story, is that the ad inventory has been declining. So this could actually help ad sales by tightening up that inventory online or on air,
right?
And providing a little scarcity,
and then it's all offset with this yeah, new revenue yeah, stream, yeah,
exactly
of hardcore fans.
That's a tricky business, though.
Yeah, I don't blame ANC, but I also don't see any benefit to doing this, especially at $7 a month, man.
Just
buy all the episodes.
At that point, definitely. Walmart's Vudu video service is allowing users to convert movies on disc to ultraviolet digital copies, which they've done for a long time. We've talked about this before. You pay $2 for a standard def copy, or really what you're going to do is pay $5 for a high def copy. This is if you don't want to bother justifying fair use and ripping it yourself, right? This is for somebody who just is like, you know what? I'll just pay you $5 to do it for
me. But is there any way to subvert the copy protection without violating federal law and breaking the...
If there's no copy protection on the disc,
okay, but
if you don't have to circumvent the copy protection on the disc, then you can do this, and you can do that sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So anyway, that being said, that's old ground. The new ground is that you will be able to do it with your smartphone. You just scan the barcode on your smartphone and boom, pay the $5 and it's yours.
Do you remember the lawsuit between the RIAA and MP3.com back in the day? This is the identical service that destroyed mp3.com
right.
back in the day.
Yeah.
Because it used to be, it's like, hey, just take your CD, stick your CD in, we'll read the Redbook audio ID, and then we'll unlock this mp3 for you so you can stream it wherever you want.
This is even easier though, right? Like, so the maybe it's legal if there's not copyright version is download Handbrake, install Handbrake,
right?
Take the DVD out of the case, put the DVD in your computer.
Sure.
Have to have a DVD drive, by the way, which a lot of people don't have anymore.
Sure.
Then rip it, make sure that went well, then store that somewhere, and maybe have to install Plex. Now, a lot of you out there are like, yeah, got all those things. Sounds super easy. Why would I pay $5? But for some people, that's like, that's a lot of steps. Never installed Handbrake. Don't want to use Plex. I will gladly pay $5 because I can do this from my smartphone. I don't even have to take the disc out of the box.
Well, and keep in mind what this really is. This is a sales scheme that I'll bet you anything that, because again, you are not paying for a service to translate. You are buying a new copy of this, right? And it is at a discount price, but I guarantee you, you know, it's like, well, my friend Joe has this giant library and all I have to do is open up this app and just pick all the favorite movies he has and scan the UPC symbol. Like, this is not in any way a translation service or a backup service. Especially, or anything.
Like,
you're just buying stuff cheaply. You could go to Walmart, walk up and down the aisle, pick up any item, scan the barcode.
I doubt that.
So you cannot do that.
Yeah.
The service is based on your shipping address on your Vudu account, so it GPS tracks to make sure you are at your home when you're scanning a barcode.
Wow. That's not creepy at all.
Also, it has the barcodes of it has a database of which barcodes have been sold and which aren't. I didn't know about the GPS tracking. That's interesting. I didn't have to give it location information when I did this, because I did this for Casablanca just to try it out. With the phone thing, but before. So on the phone thing, it's using your GPS. That could be weird. But even if it's not, they know which stuff is in retail and which aren't. So honestly, and if you go to your friend's house and scan it, now that UPC code can't be scanned again. So your friend might get mad at you later.
If they're not individual, UPC codes are the same code. The barcode is the same for all the discs. Oh. They're not serialized.
Oh, right.
So yeah, you could have
there are questions about this then. Like, because it says you're scanning the barcode and the barcode's the same on each one.
Yeah.
Okay. Any, all of that aside, like, there's not much reason to game the system because you have to pay $5.
Right.
And keep in mind, some of these movies are on sale for $5. In Vudu.
Well, and a ton of them come with ultraviolet copies already. Like
that, some of the DVDs do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, you can go on to Vudu right now and buy a bunch of movies for $5.
Yep.
So if you went and scanned those, that would just be a waste of time. You could have just bought them.
God, I just feel it's so dumb.
It's not dumb if I'm like, I have this one beautiful movie and I have an ultraviolet account and I'm technologically lazy or inexperienced. I don't want to go through all that. And I will gladly pay $5 to get this movie that I otherwise would have to pay $20 because it is a highly sought after movie. I don't know. Again, it's like the AMC thing. I don't know how many cases that is.
If you are that person who's excited about it, talk to us about it.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
It's not like real estate. It's all about location.
We're back in the trailer park, folks. Netflix has a trailer for Death Note, which is coming out August 25th.
I know nothing about it. You'll have to sell me on it.
I don't know much about it either. I'm not going to pretend I do, but it does star Light Turner from The Fault in Our Stars. It's about a book that whenever you write someone's name in the notebook, they'll die.
Well, that's not nice.
Directed by Adam Wingard, who did Blair Witch.
This is based on a super huge anime and manga from Japan, and also Light Turner is the name of the character, not the actor.
Oh, sorry. Who's the actor?
Nat Wolff.
Nat Wolff. I got those backwards. I thought it was yeah. That makes more sense now that I think about it. Handmaid's Tale is coming to Hulu April 26th, though that's just about a month away. Stars Peggy from Mad Men.
And what's that one about?
And this is the one based on Margaret Atwood's book. Where the United States is broken apart in a financial crisis, and a big part of it has reemerged as Gilead, which is a fundamentalist religious republic.
Oh, right on. That sounds really cool.
And yeah, Elizabeth Moss plays Offred, who's the main character from the book. I don't know that, you know, it could be more relevant to today's political discussions.
Yeah. Well, any kind of alternate history, future reality, yeah, crazy
it's
talk
a great
stuff. I
book.
Love.
It's been made into a movie before, but the series, actually, the trailer looks great.
This awesome. It's
looking really good. First trailer for the return of Mystery Science Theater 3000 to Netflix has been put out by Netflix. That's coming April 14th.
Is it good?
It looks right
yeah.
to me. Yeah.
How does the production quality? I mean, it was always a low rent production yeah. to begin with.
It looks pretty much as bad as they can make it with modern technology.
That's
in
amazing.
The right way.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure. You
know? Like, it definitely looks better than the original because they're using digital cameras and stuff, but they have not like over glossed it or anything like that.
Oh, that's great.
And yeah, don't forget Patton Oswalt's in it. Felicia Day is in it. And it looks good. Of course, Crow T. Robot and Tom Servo coming back as well. Again, that's April 14th. And then even sooner is Hulu's take on Black Mirror, Dimension 404, coming April 4th.
You know, it's really tempting when you hear about this stuff, like, oh, it's just a knockoff of Black Mirror or whatever. Like, you want to pick a side and have a good one and a bad one. But it's like, if you like stories like that, having a Pepsi only elevates yeah. Coke. You
also,
know?
Freddie Wong directing.
Oh, right on. So, very cool.
Yeah. This is a 6-part sci-fi anthology series. I just want more. Like, especially with anthology series, I'm like, it's not a competitor to Black Mirror. It's like saying, you know, well, the Asimov anthology is a competitor to the Arthur C. Clarke anthology. And I refuse to read both of them.
Right.
Like, why
exactly.
would you do that?
Exactly.
Watch them both. You're going to
or at least even if you don't want to watch it, it's knowing that it's out there means that there are stories that would not have been told yeah. otherwise.
Mix your Pepsi and Coke.
take an anthology suicide.
An abomination. So Brian, what have you been watching this week?
Watched Justified twice.
I'm sorry about that. That's because you were at my house and I had watched.
I rewatched after Night Attack. We had Mike TV over, and so I pulled that little game where I'm like, let's just watch the first 5 minutes of Legion, and then suddenly it's 3 a.m. and I've watched the pilot of Legion a third time.
Again.
But I did catch the second episode, and I'm halfway through the third now.
Oh,
and just finished The Expanse.
Oh, excellent. I am with you on all of those things. I will also add that I caught up on The Magicians this week. Which I super enjoy this year.
This is the Harry Potter having sex one.
That's underselling it, to be honest. That'll put a lot of people off that would otherwise enjoy it.
Okay.
Because there was a lot of that flavor in the first season. Second season is way past that. This is like, what if Harry Potter wasn't Harry Potter, but was a real school like we have now and had to deal with real events? And what if magic was real and not real, like, oh, magic is real and can do anything. But, like, you know, you had dangerous people and, you know, people and warlike folks that you had to deal with. And yet it's they made it grad students so that they could do things on TV that maybe undergrads wouldn't be allowed to do, like drink and stuff.
Right.
But it's college age folks having to deal with it.
Right on.
Yeah. Star Wars Rebels had its finale. And I don't want to say much because I don't want to be spoiler, but wow.
God. Okay. All right.
All I'll say is space battles.
Okay. Right
so
on.
So many space battle.
And that's the nice thing about Rebels is like, even though you have stylized versions of the ships, you know, compared to the movies, the pacing and the animation and the quality yeah. of the effects are as good as anything.
Well, you get General Dodonna shows up. He's kind of been the other. He's the guy with the white beard from the first Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
from
yeah.
A New Hope.
Yeah.
He shows up, which you knew he was out there, but you didn't like, it's like, oh, we're all coming together. Mon Mothma's in it. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really good. What have you been watching? What have you been on the lookout there for, Bryce?
Hey, you ever do that thing where you find a show and you kind of dig it and then you find out that it got canceled? Ooh, that happened to me last night. But I think what's here is a really cool pick. It's Amazon's Good Girls Revolt. You guys heard about this?
No.
This came out last October. It's a period piece set in 1969, and it follows these three female researchers at a Newsweek-like magazine called News of the Week. but basically what these researchers do is they go out and do the fact-finding and getting sources and getting quotes to give to the male reporters who will write the article and get the byline. And it's a really interesting time period. It's almost kind of like a Mad Men sort of time. It's the late 60s, right?
Right.
So you've kind of got the feminist movement alongside all of the energy that comes with a journalistic drama. It's really cool, and I like journalism shows like The Newsroom, and this is a lot less like inspiring speech every episode compared to that.
In other words, Aaron Sorkin is not involved in Good Girl.
Yeah, he's not involved, and it's pretty neat. The first season, what I saw, the finale, seems like a fine conclusion if Sony doesn't ever sell it again. But rumor has it that they're looking to shop it around. But this is 10-hour-long episodes on Amazon Instant Prime Video right now of Good Girls Revolt.
I almost forgot, and this tells you a lot right here. I also finished watching Iron Fist.
Oh, I started Iron Fist and I've completely forgotten it. I got halfway through the first episode, and as far as I could tell, I'm just assuming that the whole series is just Danny Rand walking around saying like, "No, guys, it's me. I'm really alive.
Look at my face.
I didn't die."
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have much nice to say.
Go,
my mom
go,
told me if
go.
I don't have much
no.
nice to say,
well,
not
you know
say
what?
Much
I'm telling
all.
You, say spit bile.
I don't have bile to
and
spit.
Venom.
Here is my review of Iron Fist. The second to last episode, which should be the one where you're really ramping up to find out like, ooh, what's going to happen? I would fall asleep during scenes, wake back up, and it was still the same scene. And I didn't miss anything.
Oh, wow.
Because it was two people talking.
So do you think, if you're somebody who's really excited for the Defenders, right? Is that, that's the Avengers style thing coming up, right?
Yeah. And there are good parts of Iron Fist. I think Colleen Wing's character is great. I really like to see Claire, come back. She's been in every one of these series so far.
Oh, that's right.
She's the Rosario Dawson character.
Yeah, sure.
And Bakudo is a good character. I wish we actually spent more time in Kunlun. The few glimpses of it we get are like hazy, like Danny barely remembering things. I'm like, show me that. Mm-hmm. I that sounds interesting. But instead, yeah, a lot of it is people wandering around going, I'm Danny Rand, but I want to be back in the business. But wait, now I don't want to be back in the business. I'm supposed to defend the hand, but I don't really want to defend against the hand. What do I want to do? I think I just want to smoke pot, but I can't say that. So, yeah,
yeah. Wait, do they imply that he just
no,
sits around?
No, but he looks like that guy. He looks like that guy in college who was like, man, I'm just going to travel to Tibet. I'm not going to class.
Yeah.
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 Nothing wrong with that, by the way. If you did that, that's great. Danny just doesn't do much in the... Yeah. In the episode. All right. Hey, folks, is it your or my turn?
No, it's your turn.
Is it?
It's your
right.
turn. Look, you've got all the news in the world. It was so much fun to walk in and just see stacks of copies of Pilot X, man.
They're everywhere.
I am so excited for you.
I keep getting people sending me pictures of them on the shelf, which is fantastic. I'm even more excited if you buy it, but I love seeing it in all the places. My brother was in Green Bay, Wisconsin. It was like, hey, I saw your book on the shelf. So yes, Pilot X, it is a novel about a time traveler. It's got 50 plus reviews on Amazon right now, and it's close to 5 stars. So apparently some people like it. Thank you, everyone who's reviewing it. Keep reviewing it. That helps more people find out about it. And it's about a time traveler who's skipping, around in his time ship and then gets pulled into events that are bigger than him. And he has to face a horrible choice about saving the universe. So if that sounds cool to you, find it wherever books are sold, including on Audible.com.
Two things real quick. A little bit of inside baseball on this one. From what I hear, it really matters to get over the number 100 on reviews at Amazon. So you're halfway there.
Yeah,
so you
yeah.
want to get all the way there. Also, I just bought it on Audible. Don't forget Audible. You can also give it the reviews over there as well. And if you get a subscription to Audible, available at audible.com/rogue, then you can get it for free. Free.
Free?
Yeah.
Wow. And support Brian's other show, which makes this a 2-for-1 plug.
To see, we came
Everybody
together like Voltron.
Wins. All right. Got something we should be on the lookout for. Email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Well, Sony just made it easier for me to stay on PlayStation View. The MLB Network is now part of its core tier. That's not the cheapest one, but the way they do it is they have a tier that only has like ESPN and one like Fox Sports 1, and then there's a tier that adds a bunch more sports channels. And so if you go for that core tier, you can get MLB Network. That's the one that also has the NFL Network. Service has recently been emphasizing live sports. By that, I mean PlayStation View, introducing NBA, NFL, multi-view features. So you can actually see multiple games at once. That was really cool for the NCAA tournament that's going on.
Mark, is this Daniels. Going to? Are you going to continue to have your blackout issues that drive you nuts?
Yes,
because you're an alcoholic drinking too much all the time.
I mean, not really. MLB Network. Adding MLB Network just says, hey, World Baseball Classic was only on MLB Network. You could watch it on PlayStation View instead of DirecTV now. Hey, there's a game on MLB Network in the playoffs this year, and you don't have to skip it or find quirky ways to watch it on DirecTV now. You can get it there. So that's good.
Got it. Meanwhile, Comscore measured video streamed over Wi-Fi at home in the U.S. in December. Netflix, of course, led with 40% penetration. YouTube is at 30%, while Hulu and Amazon are behind. Hulu users and Netflix users both tie at 25 hours a month. That is astonishing to me that YouTube is behind Netflix. Now, I know that Netflix has longer programming.
Yeah, right.
And whereas YouTube has been focused on more short form stuff, but this makes sense then if these metrics, I assume some version of them YouTube had before. And if they truly, they're like, we could serve more ads if we get more duration. That's why you've seen this shift in YouTube where the algorithm is definitely benefiting longer form content.
Also, this is just for TV connected devices, right? This doesn't count your tablet, your phone. And that's where more people are going to watch YouTube.
Yeah.
So you could also look at it as, wow, 30% ain't bad for something where people don't usually think about sitting down and turning on the TV to watch it.
Well, that only makes me more amazed because every time I tell somebody that I watch Netflix,
get more amazed.
Every time I ask people where they watch Netflix, it's always on their mobile devices. So it's like if on top of that 40% penetration for for desktops and laptops, and I assume like what smart TVs.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, okay. That's still super impressive.
Most people, I mean, the data shows that most people watch Netflix on their TV, though, and most people don't watch YouTube on their TV, so they are coming from opposite sides.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Twitter announced its Periscope Producer API. This is the one we talked about last week. We didn't know it was going to be called that, but that's what it's called. That lets you live stream without using the Periscope phone app. You have to be a partner, but anybody can become a partner by applying. Partners at launch are Camera Maker Livestream, the Mevo camera, Wirecast, Switchboard Cloud, and Teradek. So that means when I say anybody can become a partner by applying, I'm talking about the tech. You, if you're using Mevo or Wirecast or Livestream, can now just stream right onto Periscope from your desktop. You don't have to use the phone app.
Yeah, that's I don't know how big the adoption will be for this, right? Because right now we're live streaming along with Diamond Club TV. We're at Twitch, and Twitch has inherent discoverability and a built-in chat and the ability to algorithmically recognize, hey, this is really blowing up. Let me serve it up to other people. Whereas in my experience, Periscopes are a one-way trajectory. You start, you get a flood of people, and then slowly they all get distracted and trickle off.
Well, and Twitter's trying to fight that perception with this, I think, and trying to say, hey, you don't think of Facebook Live that way, right? You think of Facebook Live as a place to watch these high-level broadcasts because they paid a bunch of people to do that.
Right.
Well, now all you high-level broadcasters can do this on Periscope. Now, question is, will they?
Yeah, I'll tell you this much. If anybody is in a position to want to take advantage of it, it's me, because I do have a sizable audience on Twitter. Yet the thought of rushing them all, like if I go live on Periscope, I want it to be something candid, electric in the moment, not this the grind of a long podcast.
And this is why I didn't think they would call this Periscope.
Yeah.
Because all this is, hey, broadcast live on Twitter right now. Right. But because it's the Periscope API, it makes it feel like, oh, so it should be that informal thing. Right. No, the whole point of this is take your Wirecast setup and go live on Twitter.
Well, and you know what? That is a benefit. If you wanted to do a Q&A, now you could do it like Barack Obama is not going to go live on Periscope and just handhold his camera.
Or if he does, it's going to be because he wants to have a candid, like,
correct. But if you're going to do like ask a president a thing, then you're going to want to be able to have it look good and go through a, you know,
totally
fancy camera and stuff.
You got the next one.
I sure do. In iTunes 12.6, Apple now allows users to continue watching movie rentals on other devices. The Watch Anywhere feature requires iOS 10.3 and tvOS 10.2, which are both still in beta. Rentals are still subject to time limits on viewing. So that's nice. So you can get it started on your mobile device and then throw it to the TV.
It's something that Amazon already does.
Yeah.
Lots of others already do. Welcome to the party. Now you can do it with iTunes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. If that's your store of choice, you're excited about that. Netflix announced that Firefox on Linux can now natively play the service's video. Because of the way it encodes for DRM, Linux users previously had to use Chrome with the encrypted media extension or some other workaround. But now, Firefox, which is often used on Linux, can just go to Netflix.com and start playing.
Very good.
Very cool. Let's move on to some dispatches from the front. Chip from Boston pointed out when we were talking about ATSC 3.0, the new standard coming for broadcast, that I said that the spec included DRM. And he wants to point out that the original ATSC spec that we have now, 1.0, does include copy protection. A TV station can enable what's called a broadcast flag that's in the signal and limits how and where video can be viewed. Chip says, I use the Windows Media Center as my DVR, and one of the local stations in Boston had the flag enabled, so I could record their content on my computer, but I could only watch it on that machine. If I tried to copy it to another computer or stream, it would not play. Most stations, particularly local broadcasters, do not enable this flag, and Chip is hopeful that that means they won't in ATSC 3.0.
What do you think? Do you think
I was aware that the broadcast flag is there. It's almost useless. It's easy to defeat, and like it says, you can play it on the computer you record it on, even with the flag. ATSC 3.0 is like, you can have an encrypted signal. It's like, you can't even record this at all anywhere without having approval and authorization. So it's a whole other level than the broadcast.
Think in terms of locks. It's the difference between just an iHook that is easy to defeat versus actually having, you know, an industrial strength lock.
Yeah, it's just a lot stronger. So Chip's not wrong, and I hope Chip is right that they're like, we won't take advantage of that too often. He may be right. There may be enough pressure to keep that free that it won't matter, but we'll see.
Meanwhile, Faiz Imam says, a sign of things to come, Canada has a sports duopoly with almost all English sports broadcasts done by Bell or Rogers. This week, they informed bars and restaurants that they can no longer subscribe to regular packages to show games at largely similar costs to home users. They must pay $120 on top of regular packages to get two sports channels. As the subscription revenue drops, how long till U.S. sports channels start doing the same as ESPN goes through layoffs and crisis as it loses revenues? How long till they realize that they have a captive market that is able to be gouged much more than it currently is? To be honest, I think that's a smart play for them to do. I think they're doing public exhibitions of content, and that, you know, I can't go take a DVD and just play Star Wars and have, you know, 100 people at my bar watching Star
Not
Wars.
Not legally.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this could, I don't want it to be gouging. $120 seems like it might be a lot for just an average bar.
Think about it in this terms.
I didn't want to have a conversation about that.
Okay.
All I'm saying is, I hope the price is reasonable and bars can afford it.
I think 120 is reasonable because that's... But
whether it's reasonable or not, I think it's probably really smart to say, hey, guess what? We don't have a single cable service, and it would be super expensive to have a separate one just for bars. It's a lot easier to deploy that now and say, oh, hey, this app is for bars, and you pay the reasonable amount a month to get the bar content. In fact, there may be room for an aggregator to say, we've worked with Disney and NBC and Fox to have the Bar TV app that the bar only needs to have an internet connection, and now they pay for that, and they have the license for public process. It's all taken care of, spick and span. Could be a lot easier for bars to implement that way.
Well, and really, we're just looking at the same model that already exists for high-speed internet. If you want to get high-speed internet installed at any kind of commercial place, they do not offer residential service. Right. You can't get it for $60. You have to pay anywhere from $150 to $500 for top-tier internet access. So now they'll just be doing the same thing, only on the content side of cable as well.
And that would just be so much nicer if you're like, hey, I'm signed up with this app. I'm already in the database. You don't have to send a person around to monitor and see if I'm doing the right thing, which is kind of how they do it sometimes now. It could just clean things up a lot.
Yep.
Paul from Dayton wanted to mention a couple of developments with Plex that he heard about recently. He said, I'm looking forward to testing it out. Plex is currently in the process of rolling out a DVR feature that eliminates the need for a separate recording program, and one which will hopefully solve another issue that I discuss. The other is Plex Cloud, which allows the user of a user's cloud storage program, such as Dropbox or Google Drive, as a media folder in the device, making it much easier to watch videos anywhere you can connect to the cloud. If I could, I'd like to pose a question to the Cord Killers community concerning DVR functionality. The setup I have now works reasonably well, with one exception. I've never been able to find a method for enabling subtitles and or closed captioning within any of the programs I use. While not an absolute need, having some type of on-screen text can occasionally be helpful. I know Brian's a big fan of that. I wondered if anyone else has a method for enabling this feature.
I am really surprised that he's having any trouble with it, because as I understand it, information for closed captioning is baked into the video signal. So right. If you have a recording of the video signal, you have that information.
Here's the problem. He's saying, I can't figure out how to turn that on in any of the programs I use, but we don't know which programs he's using.
Oh, got it. Yeah. So that's a good question. So if he's looking at a copy, I believe WinVLC, I believe has captioning ability in there. I'm making that up though, but yeah. I'm sure.
I guess what we'd say is, if you're a Plex user and you have a program you use to watch your videos that can enable subtitles and closed captioning really easily, let us know.
Yeah. Cordkillers@gmail.com.
Tom Mahoney says, I'm not sure if this has been mentioned before, but I just found the Expanse's interactive story guide at sci-fi.com. Don't forget, here in America, we spell it S-Y-F-Y, sci-fi.
You know why they did that, right? That wasn't like some loose rebranding thing. It's like because they couldn't trademark.
No, yeah.
They couldn't trademark S-C-I-F-I. But they could trademark SYFY.
I mean, you can trademark SCIFY.
As
maybe someone else had it? Or
yeah, something? Or as I understood it, that this was a simple way to have a word that they could own.
They could make
all
sure
the
nobody
rights.
Else had
yeah,
it.
Correct, yeah, correct.
Exactly. Sci-fi.com, the Expanse /enter the future/inside. Tom says, I'm finding this pretty late in the second season, but it's fun to see where everything was relative to each other. You're presented with a diagram of the solar system, and you can highlight different areas, seeing where different ships are, who's on them, what they've been doing. And best of all, you select what episode you're currently on, so only the information up to that point in time is shown. No spoilers. I've not read the books, but this would have helped me keep track of things in the first part of season one.
This is brilliant because The Expanse is very different. You know, Battlestar Galactica was almost high fantasy. You never really understood where they were, what was happening. It was very visceral in the moment. Whereas the Expanse is an extremely well thought out chess game happening, chapter by chapter.
Yeah. And if you're not super familiar with the solar system, you know, this can help you get a little more enjoyment. You can still enjoy it without it, but like if you now know, like, oh, that's Ganymede, and that's how long it takes to get from there to there. And that,
right.
Makes a difference. Thanks, Brian, for being on the show.
Hey, man, it's good to be here.
You can find us every week right here at cordkillers.com or live on diamondclub.tv. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. And we are live, like I said, diamondclub.tv Mondays at usually, this is an exception, 7 p.m. Eastern.
Special brunch edition.
4 p.m. Pacific. We are off to finish our Eggs Benedict. Goodbye.
Hey guys, Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and you know, pledging them out. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you can gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
It's up to you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.